The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
In all crime categories, about 65% of those arrested for burglary, forgery, theft, robbery, and other violent crimes such as murder have been arrested before. Chances are for the same kind of a crime. Maybe there's something wrong with our court system, especially the juvenile court system, where people are put on probation, where the state, in California at least, pays $4,000 a head to the county, $9.2 million in the year between 71 and 72, to subsidize young juvenile offenders so as not to put them behind bars, the idea being that a court-appointed probationary officer will put this kid back on the street where he is less prone, apparently, to turn in to a criminal. And yet, by the time that youth has killed someone, the chances are he has been arrested at least 15 times, if not more, for an assorted series of violent crimes ranging from auto theft, burglary, mugging, armed robbery, and assault with a deadly weapon. Criminals are made, not born. You can look at the baby pictures of everybody from Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini down to some of the pretty boy Floyds of the roaring 20s of our days of prohibition, or some of the youthful crimes of today, and they were all sweet, lovable little babies gurgling away at their mothers one day. I suppose the mother of Adolf Hitler thought he was a cute little kid. Maybe you will say, I don't see how, but it's quite likely. Benito Mussolini may have gurgled away, and his parents probably laughed at him over his cute little tries at the Italian language for the first few moments of his second year or so. I don't know what kind of a student he might have been, but I know that all little kids are cute and sweet. It doesn't matter what color they are. It doesn't matter whether or not they're legitimate. It doesn't matter, really, whether they're handicapped or even malformed. There is something sweet, innocent, and a little bit even pitiable about the tiny little babies brought into this world. But an increasing number of them are growing up to kill their fellow Americans. Something is terribly wrong with the crime picture in our big cities today, with the cities becoming armed camps. Crime has changed neighborhoods, changed architecture, with people being locked up and the criminals outside. The entirety of the American design of a home has changed dramatically. And now our senior citizens' villas with their moats and their armed guards, and like as not, in one case at least that I know of, a moat and a drawbridge in the Southern California area, are becoming in vogue. We seem to be going back to the Middle Ages, when all of the cities in Europe and other parts of the world, such as Central and South America, with basically a European architectural culture, would build a huge big wall right on the main street with virtually no sidewalk, and had an interior courtyard and giant iron grill work over the windows and iron shutters, because in these days the thieves who would kill you for the local bread, nobody's life was really safe. Well, today the average American knows that there are many areas in any modern American city where young people, girls, your wife, your sister, your girlfriend, your daughter, does not dare go at night. But do you know there are many areas now where even in well-lit shopping centers and parking lots, you don't dare go at night. And there are other areas, as all people know, where you don't dare walk through in broad daylight in some of our big cities. Now, I can get long-winded and yak about crime. Crime is bad, crime is evil, crime is wrong. Let's do something about crime. We get nowhere. This is wordage, which rhymes with verbiage, which rhymes with garbage, which is nothing but a form of pollution. People are talking in the political circles about crime and what to do about it. Basically, no one in our society is really convinced about how to solve crime. They're dealing with the effects, so let's talk about the effects for a moment. We have seen that incarceration doesn't work. That's just a flat statement. Incarceration doesn't work. Doesn't work why? Doesn't work, what do I mean? It doesn't work by rehabilitating the criminal. It works in one way and one way only. That is, it's terribly expensive to put a person behind bars and keep him there for the rest of his natural life for committing one or another form of assorted violent crime. That at least keeps him from society and effectively sweeps our problems under the rug. It doesn't work because it doesn't rehabilitate that person. It very seldom makes that person really penitent. You know, a penitentiary is supposed to be a place where a person becomes penitent for what he has done. This rarely ever occurs in a penitentiary, as a matter of practical fact. It doesn't work in the sense that it does not make model citizens out of younger people. I was doing a series of programs in the Chino, California Institution for Men and Women, and I was struck time and again by how I was told there aren't any special cells or special corners of the prison for drug addicts or for sex offenders or for muggers or armed robbers or murderers. That when you take a kid on possession and give him 1 year and throw him behind bars, you're putting him in there with all these other types in a society of criminals, where he then is rubbing shoulder with people with a record of big city crime, anybody from somebody who might have cheated on his income tax, who might have embezzled a million or two, to someone who might have been a member of the mafiosa. And so there isn't any particular part of that prison where the young innocent first-timers go. They're all in the same area. Well, we know the sensationalism of the Arkansas prison farm system and the dead bodies that were found buried clandestinely, at murder inside prison walls, drug possession, and easy access to drugs inside of prison walls. We are fairly familiar with the unpalatable situation in the hardcore maximum security prisons of our big state prison and federal prison systems. And we all don't like to hear about it. We don't like to pay attention to it to face the problems that are there. So now, especially in the state of California, where I happen to know a little about it, other states I cannot vouch for what is being done there, but at least in California, the idea was that the state could pay a subsidy of $4,000 per person to the county of Los Angeles for not sending to state prison a young juvenile offender for auto theft, armed robbery, or maybe some other terrible crime, you know, larceny or grand theft or something like this. So instead of putting them behind bars, they decided to put them on probation. Now, you may feel that that doesn't really represent a lot of people. I've got a lot of statistics here. I want to look for one in particular that was surprising to me about the probation subsidy plan and how it was stirring a great deal of controversy over this idea of getting this infinite number of lawyers and of social workers and probation officers to work with these young people, give them a slap on the wrist, say, here's your probation officer, he visits with him a couple hours a week or 15 minutes every 2 weeks or something, whatever it is, and then eventually he ends up back in the police record again. Well, here's an article that appeared in a recent edition of the Los Angeles Times about the probation subsidy plan, stirring a great deal of controversy over whether this idea of paying $4,000 for each convicted person that officials want to keep out of jail is really helping, rather than send them to a state correctional facility. It's called probation subsidy. And it's based upon a very simple premise, that is that your tax dollars, if you live in California, and that means mine, and they sock it to you in California, your state taxes blow your mind in California, and it's kind of interesting to know where some of them are going, would be saved if juveniles who would normally be sent to state correctional facilities are placed instead under intensive supervision. Intensive supervision. That's an interesting phrase by the county probation department. I'm not taking any pot shots at the county probation department. I'm merely reading an article, and I don't believe everything I read in the paper. So it says, since it costs less to keep a person on probation than in jail, the state saves money and the county picks up additional income from the state subsidies. But the program does place back on the streets many people who used to wind up behind bars. And of course, some people might wonder, are we, the average citizen, really all that much better off with all these people back on the streets instead of behind bars? Anyhow, I think they'll get around to wondering that. At least the Los Angeles Chief of Police, Ed Davis, who I have met on a couple of occasions and interviewed on this program, calls this whole probation thing blood money. He says it doesn't make any sense, and he is certainly against it. He cited the case of a juvenile who was arrested 29 times and several times was released without being charged, but there was a total conviction number of about three. It started back in 1964 in this one boy's case. His first arrest was for burglary in 64, next in January 67 for automobile theft. In October of that year, arrested for assault. May of 68, arrested for malicious mischief. Again arrested for malicious mischief and burglary. Arrested for receiving stolen property then. After that, arrested for robbery. Then for theft. And then also arrested for robbery. Then assault with intent to commit robbery. Arrested for activities of disruptive nature on school grounds. Finally placed in a camp. He escaped from it. A month later, arrested for theft. Then arrested for robbery. Then arrested for robbery again. Then he was placed in a California Youth Authority place on March 71 and paroled on October 18th of 72. A few days after the parole, he stuck a gun in a car and blew half a man's head off, and then he was arrested for murder. But he took the car, kicked the body out, stripped the car, and tried to sell the parts. So there is a typical example of the approximate 500 hardcore people running around the streets of the Los Angeles area with probationary lists that would choke a horse that are supposed to be model citizens by this fantastically expensive $9.2 million paid the county in 71-72 years at $4,000 a head to keep these people out of the state prison system, because our state taxes would be presumably even more taxed by supporting the additional facilities needed to put all these people behind bars. But you know, you'd say, well, how many people are there out here on probation? What does that really involve? 6 or 8 or 10 people every year put on probation? I was amazed when I read this article of how Los Angeles received, the county did, $9.2 million in state funds for this program during 71 and 72. And it said, as of December, and let me see, the article was in February 1374, there were 61,531 adults on regular county probation in Los Angeles County. 61,531. Last time I checked, that's more than the population of Longview, Texas. All on probation at the same time. And 6,110 on the state-sponsored subsidy program. There were 14,413 non-subsidy juveniles on probation during that month. Add that to the 61,000. But this other 6,110 on a state-sponsored program and another 2,261 on the subsidy during that same month. While a standard probation caseload is 150 adults or 75 juveniles per deputy probation officer. There's your workload. 150. The probation officer has 150 of them. He's rehabilitating and saying, why did you stick that gun in that poor little frightened candy store operator's face? And we think we're getting our money's worth? I'm not quite sure about the probationary system, but then I'm not quite sure about capital punishment and the federal prison system or the state prison system either. But I am sure of one thing, that this entire situation is treating an effect instead of dealing with the cause.
You are the victim. Yes, one way or another, we all feel the effect of the global increase in crime. Violence fills the pages of the world's newspapers, dishonesty and corruption are rampant, laws go ignored as society suffers. But what can you as a private citizen do to protect yourself and those you love? For the answer to this important question, you need to read the informative booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped. Here's how. This 82-page Ambassador College publication also documents the crime picture worldwide, examines our criminal society, and presents sound measures you can employ to protect yourself from the increasing menace of crime. Your copy of Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How, is free and will be sent upon request. So, if you're tired of being the victim, remember, crime can be stopped. Request it now. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
Here's that book that we're talking about. This was done as a compilation of research material from the FBI Uniform Crime Statistics, state, federal, and city statistics. But it isn't just an endless series of statistics. It's also a great deal about what you can do. It has to do with about your home, locks and French doors and windows, concealing shrubbery, leaving milk bottles or papers out there that advertise when you're gone. What to do in the case of, you know, when you go home, you're maybe going out to dinner and you have a babysitter there. And it's helpful, newsy information you can use. It has to do with prevention of crime, and it has to do with the Los Angeles Police Department campaign of some years ago, which was sloganized, never give the criminal an even break. And why should you be giving him the benefit of the doubt? This booklet could help save your life and or your property, and I think your life comes first. So write for it. It's free of charge. I say that so far, people are dealing with the effects of what is happening rather than a root cause. At the beginning of the program, I said criminals are made, they are not born. And the factory that produced every last one of us is the home from which we came. Now, it's a vast subject. It gets into ethnic groups. It gets into the social and the class structure, the economic structure of our society. It gets into the fact that following the days of Reconstruction and the carpetbaggers in the South, when the Negro male was suspect, that over those many, many years of the subjugation of the black people, and until even our day today of a widening and a broadening understanding of true racial appreciation of other stocks and colors and races, at least beginning to get a little bit of a glimpse or a glimmer of hope in some people's hearts, there is still a great deal of repressiveness. But during this entire long, agonizing period of American history, the Negro male was suspect. And unfortunately, during the day of the Industrial Revolution, assembly line production, World War I and World War II, and the subsequent Civil Rights Act, and the gradual emergence of a Negro or a black middle class, the Negro family was largely a matriarchy. It's just now beginning to really emerge in its true middle class and upper middle class, solid American family image. And I personally am very happy to see, even on television, a lot of times you'll see a black family, and you will see a lot of people taking account and taking a second look, and I hope that it's not tokenism, at the fact that blacks should be represented and that the black middle class family structure should be represented. But what I'm saying is the truth, because there were disproportionate crime statistics, especially among youth, as a direct result of what I feel is the sin of bygone generations of people, and maybe many people still living, which virtually forced the black family in America to become a matriarchal society, a matriarchal structure, without the presence of a strong father figure in the home. And this is a broad generalization, not that there weren't many, many exceptions to it. Now, you look at the white family, blacks, whatever society or structure or part of society you're talking about, let's lump them all together and say we're all Americans. And the United States of America today has a tremendous problem of violent crime on the rise again. Bombings, kidnappings, knivings, violent gang fights, one a day in Los Angeles attributed to youthful gangs themselves. And a lot of these are happening in neighborhoods where there are bowling alleys and there are these softball diamonds and there are public swimming pools or other facilities that these kids could use to stay off the streets. So somehow, some of the facilities aren't working. Some of the subsidized programs aren't working. The bridge back and halfway drug houses and so on don't really seem to keep these kids off pot and off harder drugs. And about half of all crime is related to feeding a drug habit. Well, it all begins back there in the crib and on the living room floor, on the carpet, staring at television. I have talked personally on a couple of occasions to Dean Birch, who was former head of the FCC, and he has told me, and so has the legal representative of the FCC, how the average American child spends more time staring at his television set by the time he is 6 years of age and is going to go to school. He has already spent more time by age six looking at television than he will spend in formal education for the rest of his life up through high school. Now, that's rather a shocking statistic. Maybe this is speculation, but when you find that about, I think it's 80%, don't quote me, but a very large percentage, I thought it was 83, so I'm minimizing it, of the actual brain capacity, I'm not talking about capacity for learning, but the physical size, or the quantity, perhaps, of the brain, as opposed to quality, is developed by about age three. That our heads tend to develop and grow much more rapidly. That's why a little toddler, you know, has a head that is almost as large, about 83%, as it's ever going to be, or his body is maybe only a third or less. Well, this is important perhaps in one aspect, and that is that those preschool formative years are infinitely more important than a lot of people seem to feel. As the Twig is Bent, a book by Holman, The Die is Cast, you know, From Little Acorns, and all these things that you've heard. But it's so absolutely true that a child, as J. Edgar Hoover once said, who is taught to respect the laws of God will have little problem respecting the laws of man or authority in the civil community in which he lives. Instilling respect for authority, an appreciation for other people's rights, should begin in the home. Now, where homes are broken and ripped apart by divorce, where pair-bound and trial marriages situations abound, where an attack against the American family, the American structure of society as constituted around the family, is occurring left and right and from every polarization, politically or ethnically or religiously or socially or educationally, and it is under attack as an institution, you're going to see the fallout from it all. The media has to share its responsibility because of violence in television, violence in motion pictures, Magnum Force and Dirty Hair. They're blasting people and pieces of cat's liver flying against the wall and whole bottles of ketchup in slow motion, and the kids are just chattering away in glee, and then all of a sudden you check with a gun store, you find out you couldn't buy a .44 Magnum in this country if you got on a waiting list and were standing at the end of the Ruger factory somewhere, because they advertise these movies and people have an absolute run on guns. Well, I think that violence in movies, books, magazines, society itself, what about the daily newspaper? You hardly get up in the morning, whether you're talking about the comic strip to the front page, you read about violent crime. But certainly the media must share its responsibility. We asked Herman Saunders, who is executive producer of a network program. Yeah, it's all over the country. You've probably seen it, Adam 12. Whether or not media violence increased children's tolerance of real-life aggression.
I don't think there's any question about it. There have been tremendous steps made in the Saturday morning cartoon programming, animated shows, whereas you used to see a great deal of violence on them. Today you'll see much softer material. There was something about the cartoons that was very insidious in that you could see really terrible things happen. Someone walks into a cannon and it goes off in their face, and suddenly they have a little singe around their eyebrows, or they can fall off a cliff and you don't see them hit the ground, and you pan down later and they're doing fine. So this is the thing that had to be stopped, and it is stopped. I think that the biggest steps have been made in the Saturday morning, which is the main cartoon program.
Hasn't the media, speaking of the press and television, haven't they showed the impressionistic effects of some of these violent programs? For example, what things youths have gone out and done after either a movie that was violently portrayed or what have you. Do you have any examples?
I read something in the paper where there was some violence depicted in a motion picture which was played on television. Evidently, some of the really heinous parts of it had not been cut out enough, which can happen in a motion picture which is not made for the media. And after that, there was a case of some youth going out and doing exactly the same heinous crime. Now, they said they had seen the picture on television, so it one and one do add up.
If you're a parent, no doubt you've wondered what your children will grow up to be. Even more important is their character, their honesty, their morality, and whether or not they'll be able to cope with life's challenges without turning to dishonest means of making a living. But in this modern age, with its many new theories and ideas about education, the question is, what's the best way for a child to reach his full potential? As the parent, it's you who can give your children a solid foundation in citizenship, morality, working habits, and personality by using the principles of child rearing found in the pages of your Bible. These guidelines are fully explained in the Ambassador College free booklet, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. Give your children a head start. Request a free copy of The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
A human being is not an animal. I don't care what the evolutionists say, a human being is not an animal. He is made in the image of God, and he is given a mind. And a human being is put on this earth for a very great purpose. There's a handbook that was given you from the Creator of humankind that tells you what you are, why you're on this earth, why you're walking around on it, drawing a lungful of good, sweet air, if you can get any anymore, which is doubtful in the big cities, what you're doing on this planet in the first place. Time and again, I've taken issue with that and disproved evolution on this program and proved that there is a God. Very few people would feel that the Bible represents any kind of workable information about how to rear a child. But it tells us what we are. It tells us what we're doing here. It tells us how character is formed and developed, and it has a great deal to say about child rearing. But unfortunately, some sensational exceptions or some extremes at the wrong end of the pole have caused a stampede to the opposite direction of total permissiveness, of no discipline, no respect for authority whatsoever. The Bible teaches and preaches that a child should be corrected. Yes, even spanked and punished. Now, I understand that about 25 or 30 years later, Dr. Spock decided he made a few errors about permissiveness and has made a few statements to the contrary. I'm not going to quote Dr. Spock because I don't know exactly how much of a 180 he has done on that. If you did a total 180, I would applaud it. If you did even a partial 180, I would applaud it, because I violently disagreed with Dr. Spock on some of the material he put out about 20 or so years ago, and a lot of other child psychologists who advocated no punishment, no discipline, no authority. We have found out in the years that have gone by that our schools have become terror camps where uniformed policemen have to patrol the halls. We have found out you're just as dead if you get shot with a kid of 11 holding the gun as you are with somebody at age 45. We have found out that youthful kids that can knock an old lady to the ground and grab her purse at age 11 or 12 in gangs of 10 or 12 of them running around can be just as vicious as a pack of sharks when one of them is wounded. And we have found out that a light little tap on the wrist and revolving door justice in and out of the police station does not get the job done. Maybe sooner or later a policeman is going to show up at some parent's home and say, your kid just robbed the corner drugstore. You are under arrest. But I doubt it. But if that were to happen, I can't really imagine what the consequences would be. So I won't speculate on that. Back in Proverbs 22 and verse 6, it says to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And that is the very beginning of one of the Proverbs, of which there are many, about child-rearing. Well, this booklet, The Plain Truth About Child-Rearing, is a booklet that wades through a lot of some of the most hideous, insane quotations, I believe, you will ever read about child psychology, and shows you what is wrong with the permissive society we created back in the early 40s and 50s, and how we're beginning to pay the piper today. Write for it in the booklet on crime, free of charge and no price. Protect yourself against crime. Write for this booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped. Here's how. I have talked to police people all over the United States, some of the leading police chiefs of the big cities in the United States, who have said that in our society it seems to be all turned around backwards now. The criminals are the ones roaming the street that seem to have perfect freedom, and the, as we say, the innocent people. And I use that term with regard to innocence in man's sight, not God's sight, of course, but the innocent people are the ones that are locked up at night. And you know, the more you think about that, the truer it is. People lock their doors at night. They lock their French windows at night. They have, I hope they do. I mean, you should. You should be all locked up at night, you know, and you should be locked up in your automobile when you go places, in your car. Now, this booklet on crime can be stopped, here's how, is not a theology booklet. It has nothing to do with theology. It has to do with locks and pickpockets and robbers and rapists and armed robbers and murderers. It has to do with assassin. It has to do with a criminal society immersed in violence. It has to do with violence in our entertainment. It has to do with ways in which you can protect yourself against crime. So this booklet shows you about your own home, how to discourage burglars, what to do before you take a trip, what to do while at home, what to do on the way from home, what about your doors and windows, backyard fences and hedges, dark areas, what to do when you plan prolonged absences. What about you and your automobile? Do you ever check it before you get into it, especially at night? All you need to do to receive this booklet is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that, if you would please, the call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of The Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in The Plain Truth, plainly, even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. And that's what you will read in The Plain Truth. It is Plain Truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write for it. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.